Voltron fans, it's finally here. Our chance to review brand new Voltron episodes courtesy of DreamWorks and Netflix. So we have a special message for all Voltron fans from the executive producers of Voltron Legendary Defender, Lauren Montgomery and Joaquin Dos Santos.
Hey everyone out there listening to the Let's Voltron podcast, thanks for being such huge fans of Voltron.
You guys are the best and we couldn't do it without you.
We'll be hearing from both of them later in this podcast as we have a special exclusive interview with both of them. But first, I want to introduce your hosts. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, my co-host, Greg Tyler.
Great to be here as always. And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, here as always is your host, Mark Morrell.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you very much. We have to let everyone know that we're going to be having a special interview with Lauren Montgomery and Joaquin Dos Santos. And then we'll be reviewing The Rise of Voltron. It's the mini-movie that makes up the first three episodes of Voltron Legendary Defender.
This is exciting stuff for all of us.
Yes, yes. Of course, there are going to be those of you who would rather not be spoiled. So here's what. I encourage you to wait to listen to this podcast until after you've seen the first three episodes on June 10th.
Watch Netflix on June 10th for DreamWorks' Voltron Legendary Defender.
Okay, everybody, so if you just want to listen to the interview, then stop listening before we review The Rise of Voltron, that's your choice as well. We are going to warn you that reviews of Voltron Legendary Defender will be coming fast and furious all over the web on June 6th, the same day that this podcast is coming out. And it's filled with spoilers that you will need to avoid if you want to come in fresh on June 10th. So you have been warned. You don't have to listen to this podcast. You don't have to watch the interwebs if you want to avoid everything and you just want to watch it fresh on June 10th. Did I make that clear, Greg?
I think you did. I understand people wanting to go into this fresh, and I would definitely be in your camp if I weren't fortunate enough to be able to review this. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, DreamWorks. And thank you, Netflix. If you want a review of the type that you're going to read everywhere else, except from a true fan perspective, not knocking anyone else's reviews, but you know we're here for you guys. We're fans just like you. Feel free to tune in. If you want to avoid spoilers, then yeah, maybe hitting the pause button after you hear our interview would be a good thing.
Yeah, so it's just a common thing that the producers and the studios that bring you brand new shows, they obviously want to get a brand new audience out of this in addition to the already built-in audience they have. So what they do is they put out advanced screeners so that people can review them. You're going to see all these review stories out there on the web. And of course, you're going to hear our review story on this podcast. So all those things are coming out 4 days before the actual episodes come out on Netflix. So that's their way of, you know, drumming up the interest so that they have a whole bunch of built-in viewers by June 10th.
Yep. Smart idea.
So, Greg, are you ready to hear the interview?
I am. I unfortunately was not able to take part in this interview myself, and I'll be hearing this for the very first time myself. But I'm looking forward to it. So let's go for it, Mark.
So this will just be a lot like WonderCon then.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I want to thank you guys for your time today. And I have to apologize once again that we don't have my co-host Greg with us.
No problem. Greg just doesn't like us.
No, that's not true. That's not true at all. He lives in Ohio and he's a very busy guy. It's really hard for him to break away at this time. But he really wanted to be here. And hopefully the next time we talk to you after the June 10th release, he'll be there with us.
Fantastic.
So you heard that part, right?
Yes, they're so right. I don't like them at all. Only kidding. having watched the first episode of the first three episodes edited into a single feature, The Rise of Voltron, I am definitely fans of these folks' work. So I do look forward to hopefully speaking to them in the near future.
Okay. Now, Greg and I will be reviewing this conversation and The Rise of Voltron on our next podcast coming out on June 6th.
Oh, sweet.
Oh, cool.
Because that's when they're first allowing us to post about the reviews of The Rise of Voltron.
Fantastic.
So the last time I talked to you guys at WonderCon, I gave you questions from the fans. This time, these are my own selfish questions.
All good.
That's perfectly normal.
But there are also things that I think the fans would love to know in the short time that we have with you, okay?
Great.
All right.
So first off, you both must be really excited to finally show the world what you've been working on the last 2 years.
For sure. It's, you know, it's been a long time coming. We've kind of just been working on it in a vacuum for so long. And, you know, it's weird when you're working on something, you look at it and we think it's pretty good, but you just never know how it's going to come across to the public. So it's very exciting. We're really excited that the feedback so far has been positive, and it'll be really incredible to finally hear what the world thinks of it.
Well, I have seen The Rise of Ultron, and it's fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
Awesome.
Yes, thank you so much for bringing the most awesome parts of the Voltron I remember and incorporating all the action, the humor, the villainy, the high stakes that make this a great show that will bring hordes of new fans to the Voltron fandom. So thank you. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would.
Based on what you've seen already, and we can say that this is fantastic, right?
It's been it was a heck of a ride, and I'm looking forward to the next leg of the journey. So absolutely.
And do you agree that it'll bring on hordes of new fans?
I think so. I know nothing about how Netflix marketing and all the rest of that stuff and how ratings are taken and all that, but based on the content alone, this show has got to be a hit.
That was really what we wanted, just to bring this show back, ultimately, hopefully please the old fans, but just make a whole lot of new fans, because there's a lot of kids out there that don't know what Voltron is. And it was such a big part of our childhoods that we just wanted to be able to do that for a whole other generation of children.
Oh, they're going to know.
I think the goal was sort of that if you build it, they will come. So hopefully we've done just a good show and people will flock to it.
Yeah. So let's talk about The Rise of Ultron for a second here. Mm-hmm. In my mind, the big question was, once all the lions are with their pilots, how do we form Voltron? Do we say some magic words? Will the lions know what to do all by themselves?
Right.
This had to be a tough thing to get through when writing the scenes around this, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's something we definitely struggled with, just, you know, conceptually thinking about how we do it in this version of Voltron. Mm-hmm. And you'll see, you know, it comes up again in future episodes. But it's that magical realm between science and magic that not either one can really explain that brings them together.
Well, in the end, it all comes down to teamwork, right?
Yes.
Ultimately, yeah, that's really what it is. It's if they have a common goal and they're willing to work together as a team, then Voltron will happen.
And even after it happens the first time, they're still wondering, well, how do we do this again?
How do we do it again? Exactly.
Hey, I'll tell you what, there's plenty of times where I accidentally hit a button on my computer and it does something, and I don't know how, but then, well, how do I do that again?
Yeah.
You form a giant robot, you might not know how to do it again. Yeah. It's kind of crazy.
I mean, Lauren and I talk about on a daily basis how we'll draw a picture and we get through it just by the skin of our teeth, not really knowing how we actually drew it, and it's like a big happy accident, so.
Cool. All right, so what do you think so far?
As we go through our review, I mean, certainly how these characters will build the big bot and how they learn to do it routinely is going to be, I think, is going to be an ongoing challenge for them, which is going to be kind of fun.
Yep. Okay. So have you guys been on the new Voltron.com?
Yeah, we have. Mm-hmm. We checked it out. It's pretty fancy. It's got a whole bunch of animating graphics and stuff that I wasn't expecting, but it's cool.
Yeah, it looks really fantastic.
It was updated recently with some pretty descriptive backstories for our characters, especially Zarkon.
Yeah.
Now, in the original series, Zarkon's motivation was to destroy Voltron and conquer Eris.
Yep.
In this new Voltron series, you know, he wants Voltron back. And we know that because he speaks about it in The Rise of Voltron.
He does.
Won't he just want to destroy it?
Well, I mean, when you think about how powerful Voltron is, and you think about, you know, what could be done with Voltron in the wrong hands, you know, we thought maybe making the motivation to destroy Voltron was almost a little too on-the-nose villainish. So, you know, we've got a deep lore and a deep mythology that goes back that has ties to Zarkon, Alphor, and Voltron. Mm-hmm. So all that stuff will be revealed throughout the course of the season in the series.
Yeah, but ultimately, if there's a massive, powerful weapon, more powerful than anything else out there, and you want to conquer the universe, You could destroy it, or you could take it for yourself and be that much more powerful.
All right, so what do you think about that part about Zarkon?
Cool. I mean, giving it a bit more depth works. It'll be interesting to see what has or has not evolved during the time span between, well, I don't want to get too much into the plot of this upcoming feature yet, but there is a time lag between events of the past and events of the story present, and it'll be interesting to see what the enemy has developed themselves in that period of time, and I wonder how much of that will have been influenced by our favorite big bot.
I'm also wondering how much of these backstories are going to be revealed by the end of the first 13 episodes.
Yeah, and of course, you know, we've heard nothing official that anything is happening beyond 13. But when we hear, you know, things developing throughout this season and the series, it certainly does imply that there may be something more, and let's all hope that there is.
Oh, yeah. In previous versions of the Voltron series, they had soundtracks released for the music scores. Will we be able to purchase the music soundtrack for this series?
We certainly hope so. I mean, there's no plans right now
that we know of.
But, you know, I'm a huge fan of soundtracks. I listen to soundtracks while I'm working and on my way into work.
But, yeah, it would be really awesome if we could get all of that awesome music convoluted onto a soundtrack, because we're all really happy with how the score has turned out in the show.
Who's your composer for this series?
Brad Breek.
Brad Breek. He's doing music for We Bear Bears, and I think he did all the music for Gravity Falls as well.
Gravity Falls, yeah.
He's, you know, very experienced composer, and he's brought a really unique style to Voltron that we're really happy with.
Well, what did you guys tell him you were looking for in the music for this show?
For us, it was, you know, about capturing that sort of era of nostalgia that came from the 80s, so it was a lot of synth, a lot of, you know, sort of cosmic sounds, and the synthesizer, you know, really sort of captures that, you know, in a couple of ways. It sort of, again, sort of hits on those nostalgic tones, but it also really allows for like a science fiction vibe.
All right, so we just talked about the music there. Not really sure about a soundtrack yet, but they're hopeful that there will be one. What do you think?
I wish they had done one for Voltron Force. But we did get one certainly for the Defender of the Universe and one for the Third Dimension. I do have both, and I would certainly welcome this in my collection.
Oh, yeah. Can we talk about themes a little bit? There's probably themes around each of the characters, around the villains, around Voltron himself. What types of themes were you looking for with these characters?
We don't mean to, like, say it in a disparaging way at all, but, you know, the original series was, you know, a product of two different shows being edited together and a story being made out of, you know, material that already existed prior to Voltron.
Right.
And so with that, you know, a lot of the characters, you know, they kind of fell into, you know, just your kind of straightforward heroic leader type. There wasn't a ton of room for individuality. And I think what ended up happening was viewers like us, you know, we sort of filled in a lot of gaps that might not have been there in the original series. So one of the things that we went for with this, you know, reimagining was to give a deeper sense of individuality to each one of the characters. I think that helps with the overall themes of story and the overall themes in each one of the characters.
Yeah, and the overall theme of teamwork, really kind of differentiating these characters and making them so unique, makes it more, I guess, a bigger deal when they do ultimately come together as a team, because they're coming from such different backgrounds and just different, I guess, points of view.
Perspectives.
Cool. Now, tell us about your production crew. We got to meet them at the WonderCon panel. They were there in the audience with us.
That's right.
They saw the reactions the fans had to the show, the standing ovations, the screaming, the applause, everything. That had to be a real jolt to their psyche going back to work on the series, knowing so many people are pumped for the show.
Yeah, I think it was. They were super excited after the panel. I think it was just, you know, everyone kind of had butterflies. The adrenaline was pumping. They were excited, but we've never really had to rely on that to get the best out of them. Luckily, everyone on our crew is just incredibly talented and incredibly professional, and they all work hard and they want to put their best work forward regardless. So,
I mean, we often liken our crew to Voltron. So we're lucky that we have a crew that's able to work well, and teamwork's a huge part of that as well. you know, the one good thing about a WonderCon is that it does give you that boost because you're with these shows for so long and you think you've made a good show, but to get that reaction in a room, it's electric. So, you know, you come back for a week and everybody's buzzing.
Okay, so the production crew and the fact that they're always at 100%, they are always professional and they've been pumped for doing this show for a long time, but it has to be a jolt that they got when they saw the reactions of the audience at WonderCon, don't you think?
Oh, certainly. I mean, you cannot make, you know, you don't make an episode and finish, you don't make a single episode, air it, make another episode, then air it, et cetera, for any television series except ones that are made entirely live. So any show, especially animation, has to be largely finished before the first episode ever hits the air or Netflix. And so you do work in a vacuum. And I have to say that in my short time here being on this podcast, I sort of feel the same way where, you know, you and I will record an episode and it might come out days later, but what is the actual feedback? You not only wait for the episode to be released, but then people to listen to it and people to share feedback. And so there's a little bit, I get a bit of a sense of that just through our podcast sessions, but for a crew that must be as large as the number of people who make the new Voltron show, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's got to be a jolt to actually get some definite feedback after having worked kind of in a vacuum for so long. I mean, I remember the voice cast saying during your WonderCon interviews that, you know, many of them couldn't even tell their friends and loved ones that that's what they were working on. So it's got to be really liberating to have heard what they heard at WonderCon. And of course, June 6th, when the reviews begin to hit. And of course, June 10th, when the floodgates are fully opened and everyone can watch the show.
Right, and in the original series, I remember them saying that it was just working day and night, working, and then, you know, all of a sudden they heard they were hit. You know, they didn't even have an idea that that's what had happened.
Yeah, it's just amazing. When they talked about the crew working like Voltron and all that, I actually read quite a bit about the making of television series. Listeners will probably have probably gleaned by now that I'm a massive Star Trek fan. And I've enjoyed many other movies and shows of the sci-fi genre. You know, television and feature filmmaking are hugely collaborative methods of production. There is no single author, if you will, of something like that, something of that magnitude. So your team really does need to come together like Voltron and fight the good fight. And it's great to hear that their team has for this show.
And that was funny because Tyler Labine had said that in the interviews. He said, you know, if I wasn't working on a show about Voltron, I would have said we're coming together like Voltron to make this show. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about what happens after June 10th.
We high-five each other. High fives all around.
Are you guys planning a party on June 10th?
Oh, yeah.
We are. We're going to have we're having our premiere party with our crew. We're all going to celebrate it. It's going to be a good time.
Okay, so the 13 episodes drop, fans go crazy, the internet blows up, people are all chattering about it, right?
I hope so.
That's the hope. That's the dream.
The world falls in love with Voltron again, and people can't wait for future episodes. So, other than continuing on with your day-to-day operations of the show, what will you be doing to keep this fresh in the fans' heads until the next drop?
I mean, we've got, you know, obviously the PR and marketing team at DreamWorks has a ton of cool stuff planned that, you know, will have cool fan involvement and stuff. And, you know, we're continually thinking of new story ideas and where the story can go. So, I mean, we're constantly plugging away on new content.
So we've also seen that there will be a comic series coming out from Lion Forge written by Tim and Mitch.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's got to feel good that you have that additional supplement to the series as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it does. And, you know, I think we can bank on more stuff like that happening as, you know, on those in-between times between the seasons, between the drops.
We've also got a crew of just really, you know, excited people to work on this show. And they're kind of just waiting for this thing to be released before they can start posting their own fan artwork that, we kind of like to say it's not fan art if you work on the show. But but they draw it just as fans because luckily they are fans of what they're working on.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's definitely going to be a lot of stuff out there for people to look at and enjoy.
Yeah, if you could see the amount of sketches that people that work on the show have just made, you know, while we're in meetings or while we're just hanging out, there's a ton of extra content that I think fans would really enjoy seeing.
Yeah, we have a few fans of the podcast that have, you know, as soon as all of your visuals came out, they started doing a whole bunch of fan artwork of the show. And they hadn't before that. They hadn't been doing a whole lot publicly, but boy, it really blew up after those visuals came out.
That's really cool. And it's fun for us to see too.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to be really excited about this. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
No, thank you.
Thanks so much. We really, really, really appreciate it.
And we'll be talking to you again after June 10th.
All right.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Okay. That's it. So they had mentioned the fact that there will hopefully, and we could probably bank on the fact there will be more stuff coming out in between the two drops to keep this fresh in the fans' heads.
Yes, and they're talking about multiple drops. That's good too.
Yes.
You know, it's not just between drops, but you know, they sort of let loose. There will probably be another one. That's a great thing.
Right. And then also the fact that their own people have been drawing so much, you know, Voltron stuff that they might be releasing it on DeviantArt or, you know, Etsy or something like that. And we'll get to see a whole bunch of stuff just out there that they've been dying to release.
That's cool. I just within the last year or so, I encountered some artwork by one of the concept designers for Voltron Force named EJ Sue out there. I think it's on DeviantArt, but some of the initial concepts for the lines from Voltron Force and some stuff along those lines. And it's really cool to see how ideas have evolved, how they evolved for that series. And I'm certainly looking forward to seeing that kind of material for this new show. Should be cool.
You know, EJ Sue was Dan Jolly's artist on those comic books, right?
Really? I didn't know that.
The Devils Do Publishing ones.
Well, I'll be.
Yeah.
Learn something new every day. Small world after all.
Yeah. That was the interview with Joaquim and Lauren. And like I said, it sounds like we're going to get another interview post June 10th so that we can talk to them about the episodes.
Awesome. Awesome.
And we might be able to get a longer format in this one.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. So being able to have Joaquim and Lauren on to talk about the whole breadth of that first drop, that'll be awesome.
It will. First of all, I just wanted to say real quick, I am thrilled that you had the opportunity to speak with them. So again, thanks to Netflix, thanks to DreamWorks Animation, and of course, thanks to the two of them for taking that time to speak with you. That's really cool.
Yeah. So thank you, Joaquim and Lauren. As all of you already heard the beginning of this podcast, they wanted to say a big thank you to all the Voltron fans out there. And of course, after June 10th, there's going to be millions more Voltron fans that are going to want to hear from Joaquim and Lauren. And of course, you can come to this podcast, Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast, and you can get interviews with the executive producers of Voltron Legendary Defender.
Awesome stuff. It's a great time to be a fan, gang.
So obviously, when June 10th comes, you know, we're going to be, you know, on pins and needles because, you know, as soon as that drop becomes available on Netflix, we're going to want to grab it up and start looking at it. Are you going to be able to do that, Greg?
Not on June 10th. I have other life obligations. Unfortunately, I will not be able to join the podcast or its listeners on the 10th itself. I'll be away for roughly a couple weeks, but I will be back in time for us to do our episode-by-episode reviews. So bummed that I will not be around on the 10th itself or shortly thereafter, but we will pick up and we will definitely be looking at this show in great detail.
Okay, well, I have to let everybody know that we have been trying to figure out a way that we can somehow get in communication with all the Voltron fans on June 10th to just see what they think about the show as they're watching it or, you know, after they get done watching it. So I just wanted to let people know there's no way to watch Netflix en masse, you know, at the same time. So like we had done before with a couple of hangouts that we did on Google, that's not going to work on Netflix. So we can't do it that way. But I want to let everybody know that I have the whole day to do nothing but Voltron on June 10th. And I will be watching all those 13 episodes. And I will be communicating through Twitter, through Facebook, you know, a variety of ways in order to be able to hear what you guys think and to be able to let you know what I think.
That'll be great.
It'll obviously be things that I will want to keep spoiler-free for those who haven't been able to see the episodes yet. I'm encouraging people, like, if you want to, you can go to the Let's Voltron Facebook page, and you can start posting your comments there. And then, of course, that way we're not shoving everything on Twitter and giving away the farm, you know, about what goes on in this series.
Right. You know what might be fun? I mean, I was just going to say, Mark, this is something I just came up with off the cuff. Obviously, it's for you to decide, but I'm wondering if certain hashtags might be useful, like, you know, pound Voltron spoiler if you post something that's a spoiler, or pound Voltron non-spoiler. You know what I mean? I mean, that's for you to figure out, of course, but maybe that would be a way to allow fans to share their thoughts in ways that people can choose to read or not read. I don't know, just a thought.
Right. So if you're saying that we could do a hashtag for Voltron spoiler, then they would know that they can go to the Voltron spoiler hashtag and search for that, and then they'll know that they can talk about that stuff freely. Otherwise, it's Voltron or non-spoiler.
Whatever you want to do. I'll leave that up to you, but just a thought.
Okay, well, we'll leave it open to the fans, too, to decide how they want to do it without spoiling everybody else.
Cool.
So, would you like to move on to the Rise of Voltron?
Let's do it. Let's rise to the occasion.
Okay. Well, we're really excited about this. I mean, can't tell you how excited we are about this. to have actually been able to see actual new Voltron episodes for the first time, you know, since Voltron Force. So this is just amazing.
It is. It's not just the first new Voltron since Voltron Force in 2012. I guess you could say the first actual reboot, true genuine reboot of Voltron, or first boot, if you will, of Voltron since the 80s series. You know, the third dimension was some years after some big battle involving the Voltron Force and Lotor. Voltron Force, again, some years after some big battle with Voltron and Lotor. This is way back to moment zero, you know, the very beginning of a Voltron storyline. So this is a true origin story. And that makes it truly special. All the shows have been great in their own way, but this really takes us back to an entirely new take to something that we all know and love.
And for those of you who are brand new to Voltron and you're listening to this podcast for the first time, we want you to know that these characters are as fresh to us as everybody else, okay? We're taking it from ground zero, and we're just seeing how it goes.
Yeah.
All right, so we're not putting any of our, you know, thoughts about the old series into this new one. We're just going to take this new one as it is and review it that way.
That's a great perspective. I agree wholeheartedly. I would also encourage all fans who want to share their thoughts with other fans, with us at the podcast, fans old and new. I would love in particular to hear what some entirely new fans think of this new series. Certainly folks who have followed Voltron in the past, such as Mark and myself, we want to know your thoughts, obviously, as well. But folks who are entirely new to the Voltron shtick, I would love to hear your thoughts on this show.
All right, so I'll let you lead this, Greg, and you can take us through the Rise of Voltron.
Okay, I'm kind of winging it here. I don't have the best high-level outline of the show, but we will do what we can. Let's do it. The story opens, we're at the moon of Kerberos, which is a moon of Pluto in the real world, by the way, and we see a space, a team of three astronauts, Shiro, Commander Holt, and a younger character, and they are surveying the planet looking for signs of extraterrestrial life. In this setup, humans have never encountered aliens to this point. There are some humans who don't believe that aliens exist. This is actually the furthest that humanity has reached into space, so we have not yet gone outside our own solar system. They're looking for samples to, again, find alien life, and it turns out that while they're looking, alien life finds them. A mysterious UFO appears in the skies, and the three of them are abducted.
Yeah, and I just wanted to point out at this point, Shiro's hair is all black at this point.
Yes. We flash ahead a year later, and some stuff from one of the trailers airs. And this is, we begin to see Lance, Pidge, and Hunk. They're in a flight simulator. Turns out that they're in a flight simulator, and the simulator, they actually fail the flight simulation.
It was a rescue mission, wasn't it?
It was indeed a rescue mission to Kerberos, wasn't it?
Right. So yes. Apparently this Kerberos mission that had apparently failed in the eyes of the people on Earth had a lasting impact to the people on Earth.
Yes. Basically, once the simulation ends, the three cadets, they're all cadets in this simulation, the cadets Lance, Pidge, and Hunk, they disembark the simulator, and the drill sergeant guy, I do not remember his name off the top of my head, yeah, he basically asks, you know, what these guys did wrong. And there's a bunch of other cadets, they're standing around, and ultimately they decide that the cause of the failure is that these three folks have failed to work as a team.
Right, they were told they're horrible as individuals, and then their teamwork was even worse.
Yeah. These are apparently three of our future heroes, and they have a lot of learning to do. That night, Lance and Hunk, they decide that they are going to get Pidge, and they're going to sneak into town. And but while they're in the process of sneaking out, they spot Pidge leaving on his own. And so they follow Pidge up to the top of a mountain or a rocky hill sort of thing. And they find that Pidge is playing with a bunch of high-tech gadgetry, and it looks like Pidge is listening to some kind of radio signal.
He's tracking signals, and guess where he's tracking it from?
I don't know. Where, Mark?
Kerberos again.
Kerberos again.
He's really hung up on the Kerberos thing.
Yeah, for some reason. And there's some funny stuff going on here where Hunk keeps trying to get a close-up look at all this high-tech gear, which Pidge says that he created himself. So we get a taste of Pidge's intelligence here, having developed all this crazy radio technology or whatever the futuristic version of radio is. Maybe it's just radio. But in any case, Pidge keeps slapping away Hunk as he tries to get a close-up look at all this stuff.
Hunk just has this basic urge that he has to know how things work.
Yes.
You know, he's that mechanical genius.
Yeah, and we have not really touched on Lance's personality to this point, but Lance seems to be very easygoing, perhaps overly confident in his abilities as a pilot.
I would call him cocky.
Yeah, so anyway, they're up there trying to figure out what's going on, and Pidge basically says, I've been monitoring this chatter, and things have lit up from space, and he keeps hearing one word stated over and over again, Voltron.
Right. So while they're out there, a ship actually crash lands near them, right?
Yeah, a ship which is not from Earth. It crashes somewhere on Earth, and they go after it, or they try to follow it. From a distance, they look at it, they observe it, and see that it's guarded, seemingly with folks from the Galaxy Alliance, which is the organization that these folks are all cadets with. Pidge is able to see inside and determine that there's a person inside, and it's Shiro. So Shiro is warning the people in the ship who are, you know, basically trying to check him out and see who he is, what he is, and if he's healthy. Shiro's shouting almost frantic warnings of aliens searching for a weapon, and that the Galaxy Alliance, they've got to find Voltron. The Galaxy Garrison people decide they need to knock him out and bring him back to examine him. Lance, Pidge, and Hunk decide they need to rescue him, but then someone else beats them to the punch. And who's that, Mark?
Well, it's Keith. He's already set up a distraction. There's a bunch of explosions all around, and that apparently gets people enough out of the way that he can jump in, knock out a couple of the people inside the containment area, and actually be able to get to Shiro.
Yeah. Lance, Pidge, and Hunk meet up with Keith and Shiro. They all hop onto Keith's hovering bike.
Oh, can I just make a quick mention first here?
Sure.
This is an important thing that they pointed out, that he has a prosthetic right arm now, which he didn't have before, and he also has a tuft of white hair.
Yes, and this is Shiro we're talking about, just
yes.
To clarify.
Yes.
So, yeah, So the newly rearmed, as it were, Shiro gets placed onto this hovering vehicle that Keith had arrived in. And the five of them awkwardly race away, and they're being pursued by folks from the Galaxy Garrison.
Right, right. And they manage to escape.
Yes, a very action-packed scene ensues. They wind up escaping to a remote cabin.
This is Keith's cabin.
It is. And so Keith, just to give a bit of backstory that we've sort of glossed over here, Keith was actually, he recently dropped out of the Galaxy Garrison Academy. He had been the top pilot in the same group that Lance and Hunk and Pidge had been involved in. But because of his rebellious attitude, he basically failed out. And so in the meantime, it seems that Keith has set up this cabin. And Keith reveals that he's been detecting or sensing some kind of an energy of something. And he's been trying to track the source of an energy. He's getting information, very vague information, about a blue lion. And he's got this enormous map on one wall of the cabin, and he thinks he has figured out where it might be.
Yeah, he's in some caves, and he sees some lion drawings on the side of the walls inside the caves. And he thinks it may mean something about something even bigger than just the blue lion.
Yeah. Hunk reveals that he's been snooping around in Pidge's belongings, and he believes that, based on the notes that Pidge had taken of all the alien radio chatter that he picked up, that Hunk believes he could create basically a Voltron Geiger counter, or a voltmeter. I made that one up. Anyway, and so the team of five decide to venture out and try to find this blue lion.
Right. So they're able to get to the place where Blue Lion is actually being held, but it's before they even get there, they see the lion drawings on the wall. And then when Lance looks at it, he sees it's a little dirty, so he wipes some of it away. And then at that point, all the drawings turn into bright blue.
Yeah.
And then that opens up the ground below them, and they fall down.
They fall down, and inside they find...
Blue Lion.
Blue Lion, and it's encased in a grid-like force field, which I believe we saw footage of in some of these trailers.
Right.
Lance basically walks up to the force field as they're trying to figure out how to break through it. He knocks on the force field. The force field magically, or maybe not magically, disappears, and the lion leans down, opens its mouth, and a ramp descends.
Here's just something I wanted to point out, because it was funny that... as they were walking towards it, while it still had the force field on, Lance had happened to mention that, does anybody else see the eyes following them? Am I the only one seeing this? Because, you know, he was thinking the lion was looking directly at him.
Yeah, and it's very interesting because, funny in the way it's presented, of course, but it's also interesting in the sense that these lion eyes are... basically, they don't have pupils as such, so you really can't tell the direction in which they're looking. But for some reason, Lance feels that this lion is, in fact, watching him. So there may be more to this than meets the eyes. And so the pilots get into the lion.
Well, wait a minute. Even before the pilots get into the lion, what do they all see together that they didn't...
Oh, yes. They
expect to have happen. This is a big thing.
Yes, this is a big thing, and that's why I wish I'd taken better high-level notes of this plot.
That's okay.
They basically have a vision of this lion not being alone, and it being part of a greater mysterious thing, namely a giant robot, which may in fact be what everyone has... what the galaxy seems to be chattering about, Voltron.
Right. I mean, Lance, did everybody see what I just saw? And then Hunk goes, oh, my God, Voltron's a giant robot. This is so cool.
Yes. And it is so cool. And so they all get in the lion. Lance takes the controls and Blue Lion launches, seemingly on autopilot. Even though Lance's hands are initially on the controls, the lion basically does its own thing.
And Lance mentions that it feels like he's talking to him, but not, he doesn't hear words, he's just gathering thoughts.
Yes. One of the ideas that the lion seems to be feeding into Lance's brain is that there's an alien ship nearby. So the lion takes off, it goes into space, and it becomes, it's very soon pursued by this alien ship.
And it actually goes after that alien ship and manages to disable it a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. And then they're off to the races, so to speak. They fly all the way to Kerberos in seconds, keeping in mind that Kerberos is indeed a moon of Pluto. Pidge remarks that they've gotten there in seconds, and the technology of Earth would have taken them months to get there. So they have raced to Kerberos very quickly, and at Kerberos they encounter something even more mysterious, and that's a portal of some kind.
It was almost like the lion had opened up the portal.
It does seem that way. I mean, you don't really know exactly what caused it to happen. It could very well have been Blue Lion. But yeah, there's this portal. The lion seems to want to fly through it, and they do. And the portal closes before the pursuing alien ship can enter.
Right.
The lion emerges from the other side of the portal, and it lands on an Earth-like, but definitely not Earth planet. They land on this planet.
Can I just say something real quick
here? Please do. Please do.
Even before they land on the planet, the Shiro has the sense that they are many more light years away from Earth than they've ever been before. And this is just, it's hard for them to grasp this concept of being so far away from Earth just that quickly. But they do get the sense that they sort of went through a wormhole and that they're on the other side of the universe now. And that's important to note for this team.
Yeah, and actually, a very good point. Shiro notes the constellations are unfamiliar and all that good stuff. It is very important to note this for a variety of reasons, one of which being these guys are trained space pilots. I mean, they're supposed to be exploring space. So for them to show wonder at being this far from Earth, we, the viewers, know that this is truly a big deal. So anyway, they're at this planet, and the lion lands in front of a very exotic-looking, high-tech, awesome-looking castle.
Which we assume is?
Well, unless you're new to the Voltron concept, in which case this will be entirely mysterious to you, but we old-timers know that this is probably the Castle of Lions.
Yeah, what happens when they land?
They land, the lion roars, and an entrance to the castle opens. The pilots get out, Shiro, Lance, Pidge, and Hunk and Keith. They get out, they enter the castle, and they are led by lights. They come on in front of them and basically lead them into what appears to be a control room.
Right, and at that exact moment, things start activating all over the place.
Yep.
Including
two suspended animation pods, I guess.
Cryogenic chambers, whatever you want to call
it. Cryogenic chambers. Yeah, two different ones. And two people, one person comes out of each. There's a lovely alien princess who we come to learn is Princess Allura.
And she falls right into the arms of Lance.
Yes, and he's all too happy to catch her. And actually, this is a big moment because Allura is definitely humanoid, but not human. And she has ears that are a bit more, how would you describe her ears?
Elf-like,
yeah. I was going to say not really. Yeah, pointy, but not Mr. Spock pointy.
And she really mentions that Lance's ears look really strange because they're rounded.
Yes, and so this really brings home the point that our heroes are not home. In any case, Lance attempts to charm the princess. It doesn't work. The second person is revived, and that is an elder, somewhat comical person known as Coran.
Coran automatically, he goes into fight mode, and he wants to fight everybody, and he's got to calm down a little bit because Lance shows him a few moves of his own.
Yeah, they sort of have a little match of showing off their skills, but they don't actually come to blows.
It looked like at one point that Coran did a couple of moves that looked like from a video game that we used to play when they did like combat moves, like Street Fighter or something like that.
Good stuff.
That's what it seemed like.
Yeah. So it turns out they learn, Allura and Coran learn that they've been frozen or in suspended animation for 10,000 years. And our heroes learn that this is a planet called Altea.
Well, here's the thing. Is the planet that they're on called Altea?
Well, that's a wonderful question. I was going to ask you the same thing.
They are Alteans.
Yes. So is the planet Altea, are the people, is the nation of these people on this planet called Altea? Is it all of the above? Because, and the reason we're confused on this point is because the term Eris is also used in this story.
Well, here's what I thought.
Okay.
That these are the last two living Alteans left, because she mentions that Altea was destroyed. And they're on Eris, which is a different planet from Altea. That's what I got the sense of.
Okay.
Just so you know, that's my take on this.
Yeah.
Is that they are Alteans, but Altea no longer exists. This is Eris.
Okay. So that sounds like a reasonable assumption. I didn't have that takeaway myself. I was just generally confused. I honestly thought that this planet was Altea, and that it was destroyed in the sense that everyone who lived on it was killed thousands of years ago. And I sort of filled in the blanks mentally and thought Eris was the star system that Altea was in. But
I guess we're going to find out more as the backstory becomes more evident.
Yeah, and of course we can rewatch this show and maybe learn a little more in rewatching.
Right.
In any event, Altea is mentioned as a name. Eris is also mentioned as a name. And fans of Voltron prior to this series will recognize both of those names as the names of the planet where the Voltron Lions lived in past series. Eris, of course, being the Voltron name, and Altea historically being the Golion name.
Right.
We also are introduced in this scene to an alien, what appears to be an alien curse word, Quiznak. and so in the fine tradition of the Klingon Patak and Battlestar Galactica's Felger Karb.
Or Frack. Remember Frack?
Yes, and Frel from Farscape and all this other fine stuff. We now have Quiznak. And I have to tell you, my first thought was, Quizno? They still make those toasty subs? But but in any case, Quiznak appears to be this series' alien swear word to use. You know, jumping past this this bit.
You had also mentioned that there were some other people that were present. They're not actually people. They're little creatures.
Well, that's true. We are introduced to space mice, which is kind of cool for us, for folks who are a little in the know about Voltron history.
It turns out the space mice were actually in the same cryogenic chamber that Allura was in.
Yes. Allura sort of fills in a bit of backstory and says that when she was last awake 10,000 years ago, Zarkon had been about to take Voltron. Allura had argued that she wanted the pilots, or a term that she uses, paladins of Voltron, to unite, form Voltron, and fight back. But her father, King Alfor, chooses to hide the lions instead.
Right.
And it's important to point out that Zarkon is identified in the backstory as the king of the Galra, and Voltron is identified as being the only thing that can defeat him.
Right, right.
Yeah, and so in the here and now, all the Alteans, except for Allura and Kurran, are dead.
Right.
As we learned this backstory, and of course the shock that Allura is going through and realizing all this, and the surprise that our pilot heroes are experiencing, hearing all this for the first time, we now see Hagar for the very first time. She has detected sort of a resurgence of Altean life energy, which she and Zarkon believe is Allura.
Right.
And so I believe some of this was from a trailer where Hagar basically tells Zarkon, the Emperor, that it's time for them to claim what is rightfully theirs. And they're referencing Voltron.
Right.
And Zarkon basically orders his various commanders to seek out the remaining lions, and he orders the commander who is closest to what they call the planet Eris. So again, there's the bit of Altea-Eris ambiguity going on here. Zarkon orders the nearest commander, Sendak, to go to Eris and basically retrieve the lions.
Right, and what happens, I think Allura detects that there is a ship on its way to their location. But they have, what, 2 days until it arrives?
Yes.
So she tells these five people from Earth that you guys are going to have to be the ones to bring back the lions and form Voltron.
Yeah, so we have our heroes who basically unwittingly hitched a ride to an entirely different planet with aliens that they've never, you know, they've never seen aliens before. And in the span of, what, hours, they've now learned that not only are they, you know, potentially thousands, if not millions of light years from home, they are now going to be operating, if they can find them, lions that form a giant super weapon robot called Voltron. So, you know, that's a shock to the system.
That is the only thing that can stop Zarkon and the Galra Empire.
Yes. I will point out that Sendak, for those of us who have enjoyed Voltron's past adventures, Sendak bears a very strong resemblance to Urak from the original Voltron series, and also his Golion incarnation, who was called Sadak. So this is Sendak. It turns out Allura reveals that her life force is connected to the lions, so she is able to gauge where the other lions are located. Obviously, Blue Lion is now on this planet. Black Lion, it turns out, is in the castle and can only be freed once all the other four lions are present. This was sort of a security device to keep other people from stealing Black or just forming Voltron altogether. So anyway, she eventually locates the other lions, but before she sends them off on their mission to find the other lions, she basically tells which pilot is going to fly which lion. And this again touches on the trailer, that one of the trailers we had seen earlier.
Right, and I just want to touch on one thing.
Sure.
She's able to locate all the lions except for Red Lion.
Yes, that's true.
Red Lion was not showing up on the map, the star map that she opened up.
Right.
And we'll find out why soon.
Yeah. Did you want to spin through who's going to fly each lion?
Well, I think it was pretty clear in the trailers, but yeah, let's spin it through real quick.
Okay.
We've already identified this in one of our previous podcasts, but it's pretty clear that the Black Lion, you know, is the leader of the team and needs a strong leader in its paladin. So Shiro is going to be the Black Lion. The Green Lion is the lion that inquisitive, daring, right? And so Pidge is going to be the Green Lion pilot. And then she starts to say Blue Lion, but then, you know, Lance interrupts her and says, oh, the most handsome of the bunch, right? And then she doesn't even bother saying why Blue Lion. She just moves on to Yellow Lion.
Yeah, so we're kind of left to wonder, but yeah.
Yeah, Yellow Lion is the most gentle and caring, but also the most formidable. And Hunk is going to play the Blue Lion, and he's like pointing to himself, me? Really? And then Red Lion is the most agile, fastest, but also the most instinctive lion of the group, and that Keith would be flying the Red Lion. After they all get their lion assignments, we find out that Shiro and Pidge are going to split up, and they fly off on their own to go get the Green Lion.
In some space cruiser that that must have been docked somewhere.
Right. In Blue Lion, both Lance and Hunk go in Blue Lion so that they can go retrieve Yellow Lion.
Right. And so, again, to retrace our steps, we already have Blue. Black is buried in the castle. It's locked in there. Red's whereabouts are unknown. And so Shira and Pidge are going after Green. Lance and Hunk are going after Yellow.
Yep. And Keith can't go after anything because they haven't located it yet.
Yeah. So he's sticking around for the event when Allura figures out where Red is.
Right. So Shiro and Pidge go to a planet that seems pretty peaceful. It seems pretty lush with vegetation and everything. And where they are has like streams and everything. And they find a canoe that has the head of a lion on it. And they kind of figure out that's pretty much where they need to be. But then they see another creature that kind of startles them.
Yes, yeah, it looks like a kind of like a sloth, but it's a biped. So it's it seemingly has sentience, at least enough to build a canoe, and it basically motions to them. I think it notices the an emblem on a handheld piece of equipment that I think Shiro is holding.
No, it was Pidge. It was Pidge, and it had like the V from Voltron on it.
Yeah. And so it recognizes that. It motions for them to get into the canoe, and it basically leads them downriver to where Green Lion is stored. And I will point out that along the way, there are a group of cute little yellowish multi-armed animal things that sort of pop up and wave at our heroes. And they remind me a little bit of alien Pikachus.
Yeah, I even said to my own family as we were watching this, because my son watched it, my stepson and my wife, we all watched it together. Uh-huh. And I said, please nobody make any Pikachu references right now.
Exactly. But fortunately, that's all that we see of them. They're led to this gnarly, enormous pile of a bunch of tree branches sort of arranged in this crazy, I don't know, sort of like a labyrinth kind of thing. During this journey, Shiro and Pidge talk a bit about Pidge's background, and Shiro gives Pidge a pep talk. I mean, Pidge is sort of apprehensive about, you know, what if I'm not good enough to be a pilot? What if I'm too short to fit in the line and all this stuff? And basically, Shiro quotes the commander of his mission from the Kerberos. This is uplifting to Pidge for not just the reason that that is obvious here, but it becomes more obvious later. It's a big deal to hear this from Shiro. And so when they reach where they need to go, Shiro says, "Go on, you know, basically follow your destiny." And Pidge climbs up to the top of this craggy wood stuff. You hear this roar. Pidge jumps down into inside this thing, and you know, we get the sense that he's found Green Lion.
Right. So, on the other flip side, we've got Blue Lion with Hunk and Lance inside, and of course, because the Galra Empire knows that they have Blue Lion now, they're chasing Blue Lion every chance they can. So they're not having as easy a time as Shiro and Pidge did.
Yeah. They basically find a what looks like maybe a mining tunnel at the bottom of what looks like a ravine. They can't quite tell if this is people mining that don't know Yellow Lion is probably in there, or if they're actively now searching for Yellow Lion. It seems to be more the latter, since Blue Lion's being pursued by what look like Galra fighters. Lance and Blue Lion, they basically drop off Hunk right outside the entrance, and drop is almost literal. He rolls out of the
drop roll. Yeah.
Yeah. He rolls out of Blue Lion's mouth. Hunk runs inside the cave, this tunnel, and descends in an elevator. And what does he see down there?
Well, he sees Yellow Lion.
Yes.
But before he sees even Yellow Lion, he sees a bunch of, you know, lion markings again, which all start glowing yellow. And then he sees a sort of like a round shape on the wall, and he says, "I wonder how I can get through that." And he sees a drill behind him, and he obviously uses the drill to get in there. And then he sees Yellow Lion in the same force field that Blue Lion was in.
Yeah. And so then we cut to outside, where Blue Lion is actively engaged in combat with these Galra fighters, and he's trying to prevent the fighters from doing any damage, not only to Blue Lion, but also to the tunnel, so that Hunk has a chance to find Yellow Lion. And after a very action-packed scene in which Lance wonders if Hunk may have been trapped inside the tunnel because it gets hit, it seems that Blue Lion is down for the count, at least temporarily. He's in dire straits when another volley of weapons is about to hit Blue Lion, and that those weapons are suddenly blocked by
Yellow Lion.
And so
Yellow Lion, Hunk even mentions right away that it seems like the armor is even thicker than the other lions, because he can take a wallop.
Yeah. And it was funny, because Lance makes a comment, says, "Wow, you really saved me." And Hunk makes a comment, says, "Well, I was actually I was trying to get away, but Blue Lion wasn't fast enough. So basically, it was only where it was because it was slow, but it was also heavily armored. And that's what saved not only Lance, but also Hunk."
Right. So we're already getting the sense that, you know, Hunk and Yellow Lion were meant to be together, because they're both strong and tough, but also at the same time, gentle and kind.
Yeah. Ultimately, the three lions return to the castle on Eris or Altea, whatever. You know, I'm still confused on that. But in any case, they return to the castle, and Allura has now found the location of Red Lion. It's been found on a Galra ship that is now orbiting Eris.
Right. It appears as though the only way they're going to be able to get Red Lion matched up with the other lions is if they attack or something. They need to come up with a plan. And the problem is that nobody can think of a plan. They start fighting with each other. And then Shiro actually says, well, Laura, this is your home planet. This is your world, your lions, everything. What would you do? And then she can't think. She doesn't know. And then Karan mentions that, you know, maybe you should ask your father. And she goes, my father? How am I going to ask my father? And Karan shows her a place where, I guess, an AI version of King Alphor had been placed so that she could actually sort of, you know, have conversations with her father in a sort of way that he had recorded a long time ago.
Yeah, and that's a really neat point. So she goes into a sort of, as she enters this room, it takes on the appearance of like a grassy plain with clear blue skies and all that, and Alphor's image appears. There appears to be a genuine emotional connection between the two of them. So this AI seems to be very, very Alphor-like. It's not just a computer that looks, it doesn't just talk the talk, it seems to walk the walk. But in any case, basically Allura asks, you know, should we fight or flee? And Alphor says, well, all those years ago, you wanted to fight. And Allura says, oh, I think I understand, thinking that she should follow what her father did 10,000 years ago, which was flee, hide the lions. Alphor says, no, you misunderstand me. I made a grave mistake. In hiding the lions, I cost, you know, there were countless lives lost. And, of course, Zarkon is now much more powerful than he had been before. So he encourages Allura to follow what she wanted to do before, which was to fight. So she emerges from this chamber, and basically she's convinced that they need to fight, they need to form Voltron, and they need to, fight.
So that means it's uniform time.
It is. And so they get their uniforms. And they are, again, to the Voltron fans of old, these uniforms look like basically armored versions of the uniforms from the original television series. And the characters are wearing the colors that not only match what they wore in the original series, but they match the lions that they fly in this new series.
I thought it was funny how Hunk, when they saw the suits were actually in these lit up chambers. And Hunk is looking at his suit, and he's looking at himself, and he's looking at the suit, and he lines it up, and he's like, the suit's a little bit skinnier than me.
And somehow he fits in it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it exactly. Is funny. And I will say that this show does seem to take on some cues, some visual cues from anime that we didn't even see in Voltron itself back in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of what was done to anime as it was adapted for American audiences in the 80s was to sort of remove some of the Japanese-specific cultural norms. This was very commonly done in Robotech as it was adapted from its series and for Voltron as well. And so this, when Hunk is sizing up the uniform and comparing it to his own silhouette, you literally see these vertical dotted lines being drawn down him, right, to show that he's wider than the uniform. And so seeing those lines drawn on the screen is sort of an anime thing. And so it's interesting to see that touch of anime done here.
Right.
So in addition to getting their uniforms, they also get these fancy hand weapons called Bayards. Is that correct?
That's right. Bayards.
Yeah. And so each of these things has the ability to take on a unique form for its paladin. Four of the Bayards are available, but unfortunately, Shiro's Bayard was lost along with the paladin. So the previous paladin of Black Lion, the previous pilot of Black Lion, apparently when that person was lost, the Bayard was also lost. They each get their Bayards, they get their flight suits. They decide on a strategy to retrieve Red Lion from the approaching Galra ship. They decide, because the Galra are aware that blue and yellow lions have been found, but they don't know that Green Lion has been found.
Right.
They decide to have Lance and Hunk basically create a diversion by openly approaching the Galra ship and surrendering. And meanwhile, Pidge, Keith, and Shiro in the Green Lion will sneak from behind up to the Galra ship and they will sneak aboard the ship and attempt to find Red Lion. And so things go seemingly according to plan, at least initially.
Right.
The folks in Green Lion get inside. Blue and Yellow, unfortunately, they're about to be caught in a tractor beam from the Galler ship, so they have to be a bit more defensive.
And, of course, the commander says, they lied to us.
What? People lie? Bad guys acting in surprise. Yellow Lion, Hunkin' Yellow Lion, he basically decides that he's going to try to take out this massive weapon that the ship has. It's called an ion cannon. It's a weapon that they believe is powerful enough that it could destroy the castle down on Eris. And so that's his task, while Lance tries to take on a bunch of fighters that the Galler ship launches. I should point out that this ship is, in fact, Sendak's ship, the one that Zarkon had sent there. So that's what takes place outside the ship. And inside the ship, Shiro, Pidge, and Keith search for Red Lion.
Right. So they get inside and they realize really quickly that they're really going to have to split up. Keith was thinking he was going to have Shiro by his side, but Shiro needs to go with Pidge. And the reason why is because they detect that there is prisoners aboard the ship. And
Shiro remembers being there before, right?
Right, right. Shiro's about to tell Pidge, we don't have time to rescue prisoners right now. We have to think about the bigger, you know, task at hand, which is to get Red Lion out of there. But Pidge is adamant that they go rescue the prisoners. And here's why. Because if this is the same ship that Shiro was on, then it might have his father and brother.
Yeah.
And he goes, What? What do you mean? Your father and brother? They were the ones that were with you on Kerberos, Shiro. So now Shiro knows who these people were that were with him on the Kerberos mission.
Yeah.
They were Pidge's father and brother, and immediately Shiro agrees with him. They have to go try rescue the prisoners, because if there's any chance that his father and brother are on that ship, they've got to go get him.
Right.
So Shiro and Pidge go together to get the prisoners, and Keith goes to get his lion. Keith gets lost a little bit along the way, but with patience and focus, he's able to determine exactly where his lion is, and he goes to get the lion. But what ends up happening is it's in a force field, and he won't open up the same way Lance has opened up to him. This lion is a little bit more, you know...
obstinate?
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Keith is going to have to prove his worth. Well, what ends up happening is the guards end up showing up, and he's trying to fight them off. And what he ends up doing is he ends up hitting a button that opens the floorway to the space. And he's hanging on to the same place, and he's trying to shut it off. But at the same time, he's losing his grip, and he finally loses his grip and falls out into space.
Right.
But things are okay, because his lion comes to pick him up, and he, you know, captures him in his mouth.
Yeah, so Red Lion basically observed Keith being the hero and trying to protect the lion from the Galra soldiers, and Red, at least for now, is convinced that Keith is worth saving.
And as soon as Keith gets into his cockpit, he says, good kitty.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Pidge and Shiro, they find captives on the ship. Unfortunately, the captives are none of these many captives are humans. They're obviously not Commander Holt or his son, Pidge's father and brother. But these captives, all from different worlds, recognize Shiro. They call him the champion. And they basically say that, you know, if anyone can save us, you can. Now, Shiro has no memory of any of these passengers or why any of these passengers or these captives would call him the champion. They do free the captives. They send them off on an escape pod or something like that. And so off they go. And then it turns out that during this conflict, some Galra soldiers show up. And it turns out that Shiro's cybernetic hand is, I guess you could say, weaponized. He's able to use it. It sort of glows and gives him a special upper hand, if you will, in fighting the Galra.
He can even block blaster bolts with it. And
that's right.
And this becomes, I think, his Bayard.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. In any case, they get Red Lion, they all leave. But now Sendak and a number of Galra fighters are now approaching the planet. with a, at least temporarily, broken ion cannon, because Hunk outside the ship has managed to put a dent in it. Back on the planet, the Lions activate Black Lion. The Galra then attack shortly thereafter.
Well, while this is going on, they are setting up the force field around the Castle of Lions.
Yes.
And in order to get that force field working, there was a slight problem inside the cabinet where a certain crystal was out of alignment. And they needed to get it back, but neither one of them could fit in there. And of course, here come the space mice. And because the space mice were in that same cryogenic chamber with Allura, they know her thoughts. They know how she, you know, they've got a connection. So they know that she needs that taken care of. So they go inside of it and they move it and they realign that crystal, which enables their force field to work.
Right. I think they call it a particle barrier or something. Yes. But in any case, they're concerned that this thing is not going to last for long against the Galra ion cannon, which they assume is going to get fixed soon, and it does, because in part, the castle is now over 10,000 years old. Things might not work as well as they once did, and because Zarkon's technology has certainly evolved in 10,000 years. So the particle barrier will buy them some time, but not much. The Paladins all get into their Lions and they launch. They basically shoot out through a tunnel that seems to run up the central tower of the castle.
Right, from where Black Lion was standing.
Yeah, and so out they go. And now their challenge is to figure out how to form Voltron. But first, the challenge is that they're stuck in Syndax's tractor beam from the Galra ship.
Basically, what happens is Hunk says, there's no button on my panel that says form Voltron or anything like that. He tries to bunch up against Keith or something like that and you know, just combine, and that doesn't work either. And they try to fly up in formation and that doesn't work either. But as they're flying up in formation, that's when they start to feel a pull, and then that's the tractor beam.
Yeah, initially they say, oh, I'm feeling something, like maybe they're feeling the Lions form Voltron, but no, they're feeling the grip of the tractor beam.
Right.
In the meantime, the Galra ship, Syndax ship, has taken down the castle's particle barrier, and all seems lost, all hope seems lost, but then Shiro basically says, we cannot give up. He tells the team to believe in themselves. His big line is, if we work together, we'll win together. And seemingly triggered by that, by those words or the sentiment, or everybody, you know, feeling in unison, it's hard to, we don't really know, but at about that moment the Lions begin to combine,
even though they were in the tractor beam. So this is how strong that powerful force of combining Lions to form Voltron is, that it breaks free of the tractor beam and they're able to form Voltron.
We get this awesome, cool, super nifty montage of the Lions, you know, forming. We see a bunch of the, you know, all this cool technical wizardry, you know, the transformations as the Lions link up, and they form Voltron. Voltron makes very short work of Syndax's ship. He basically punches it with one of the hands and fires into the ship with the hand inside, and then does the same with the other hand, ultimately destroys Syndax's ship. And Voltron sort of skids to a stop on the surface of Eris while the ship explodes in very awesome fashion behind
him. Like we saw in the trailer.
Yeah, like we saw in the trailer. And there's a very, very popular image of Voltron with an explosion behind him that's on the internet now. That's from the same scene. So Syndax's ship is destroyed.
Before that, we saw Syndax run back behind his bridge, I guess, where he was standing. They ran back and it looked like they were going towards an escape ship that was smaller.
Yeah.
So we'll see him again.
Right. So we've probably not seen the last.
Right.
One. Yeah. So he's gone. And so Voltron wins. Syndax's ship is destroyed. Syndax possibly has escaped.
And this was all without forming Blazing Sword, because they don't even have any idea they have another weapon.
Blazing Sword? What's that, Mark?
See, for the fans who are new to Voltron, in the old form of Voltron in the original series, he had Blazing Sword, and you could just say form Blazing Sword, and Voltron would form this Blazing Sword. But they don't know that they have any other weapons, so they just use their hands and they use their whole body to drive through that ship.
Yeah, the only clue we've had that Voltron has a sword of any kind was in the very beginning of this show. We see Voltron form a sword and slice a moon, forming the D of the DreamWorks Animation logo. So
that wasn't the only time. There was the time when they all got to Blue Lion, and they also the image of Voltron for the first time.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
There was a blazing sword there, too.
Aha, there we go. There are weapons to come in future shows. But basically in the aftermath, they're back at the castle, and Shiro swears to Pidge that they will search for Pidge's father and brother. Allura and Karan, they're thrilled that these paladins have come through and that Voltron has saved the day. The battle has been won, but the war has just started.
She calls them the Defenders of the Universe. And Shiro says, "Defenders of the Universe, huh? That has a nice ring to it." And that's pretty much how it ends.
Yeah. So, what did you think, Mark?
So, I'm, you know, already excited about watching the rest of it, obviously.
Yeah.
My family loved it, and my wife even mentioned, so, when do you think Keith becomes Black Lion? So I was like, I don't think he does. I think Shiro's still going to be Black Lion. I don't think we're going to run into that same thing that we had before. So I think these guys are going to remain the paladins of Voltron. So
yeah, I'm a little less. I was pretty convinced until seeing this episode that these pilots were going to become more like what older school fans are familiar with in terms of which lines they operate. I'm less convinced of that now. I don't know what's going to happen. And frankly, I like not feeling like I know what's going to happen.
Yeah. And I mean, anything could happen. And that's what's great is that this is a new Voltron. This is a rebooted Voltron. And this is the Voltron that, you know, took the awesome parts of the original Voltron that we loved and made it even better.
Yeah. I'm glad this is not a retread. And I've said it multiple times in past podcast episodes about this series. If this were nothing more than a retread, it didn't need to exist at all and shouldn't exist if it's a simple retread. This is definitely not a retread of any of the prior shows. This is its own thing, and I, for one, am loving that it's its own thing, and I'm thrilled to discover what's going to happen with these folks as the story unfolds.
Now, there was a cool part when Hunk was able to get Yellow Lion. My son had predicted that it would be Yellow Lion that blocks the way and saves Lance from the Galra fighters.
Mm-hmm.
So he was able to see that coming, but there wasn't much else that he saw coming.
And how old is he?
He's 13.
13, okay. I was just curious because I wanted to point out, I watched this episode, this feature-length episode, twice before we spoke tonight here, Mark. And the first time I watched it, I was watching it with my 4.5-year-old daughter, who is a Voltron Force fan, by the way. And and she couldn't quite follow a fair amount of the story. And I think that's based on the complexity of the plot, I think that's to be understood. I mean, she's young. She's a smart kid, but she's also 4.5. So a lot of that stuff kind of went over her head. But at the end, she did tough it out till the end. And when I asked what she thought of it, she did seem to genuinely like it. So I think she's excited by, and the reason I'm giving, I wanted to hear thoughts from kids on this. She seems to be excited to watch new shows with characters that she at least somewhat knows. So I think that's neat to hear that that at least a couple kids are digging this show.
I think there's a few fans of Keith in this house. we like the new Keith. We like Keith the way he is in this show. And I think we're going to see some more things out of Keith. He obviously looks up to Shiro as like either a big brother or a mentor. And Shiro has that commanding presence, you know?
Right.
So I think that's a really good thing. And of course, Lance and Hunk are like best friends, and Pidge is driven by, you know, finding his father and his brother. But I think we're going to see some interesting interactions between these characters.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think I've touched on this in previous podcast episodes. I'm very excited by what potential there is in Princess Allura. I've always found her to be kind of an underrated character, especially in the original series. And I think that with her now the ruler of a dead planet, seemingly a dead planet, 10,000 years removed from everything that has been going on around that planet, she's got a lot of catching up to do. She's surrounded by her paladins, the people operating the lions that her father created, are aliens. She finds them a little bit. They're not ideal pilots. They're there largely through happenstance. So she's going to have to learn to deal with these non-Altaian strange creatures flying the lions and saving the day. Dealing with the only other surviving Altaian is Karan, who's kind of an eccentric, interesting, silly kind of guy. She's got a lot of there's a lot of potential in her character. I'm really excited to see what happens with her.
Right, and I like how they were able to bring back the space mice, but not in a way that was silly. That it was kind of cool, and yeah. the fact that she has a mental connection with them still. It was funny that Karan, when he found out that she had a mental connection with them, he tried to like think really hard, and she was like, "What are you doing?" And he said, "I'm trying to get them to make me a sandwich."
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
It wasn't working.
Yeah. If I might, I wanted to touch on a couple of points that I thought maybe might lead into plot points in the future.
Sure.
One of them was at some point there's a comment that the Castle of Lions, I'm assuming it's called the Castle of Lions, that the castle is 10,000 years old, and Karan makes a comment. It says, actually, it's 10,600 years old. My grandfather, blah, 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 apparently had some role in building the castle. Now, what's interesting is that if Karan's grandfather was working on the castle 600 years before Karan was put into cryo sleep, only two generations removed, but 600 years apart, that might suggest that the people of Eris were very long-lived. And so it's very possible that Karan, even if he hadn't been frozen for thousands of years, may be centuries old. It's also possible that Allura is far older than she appears to be, which is roughly, what, teenager, 20-something? I mean, it's hard to judge.
Right, but Shiro had even mentioned that he was amazed at how far along their technology was even 10,000 years ago.
Right. Right.
So, you know, they might have already had something there that enabled them to have a higher life expectancy.
Right. The other thing I wanted to touch on is that, you know, early in the episode or in the story, Keith, after he's defected from the Galaxy Garrison or flunked out or dropped out, he sensed a vague energy about a blue lion and was tracing the source of the energy and all this stuff. Of the five paladins, he seems to be the only one who had a connection with any lion that wasn't the one that he wound up flying. You know,
right.
He's building this map and all this other stuff and to a blue lion when he has, you know, the other guys, they just kind of feel something when they're close to the lion that they will ultimately operate. But Keith, who's never seen a lion, he'd never really heard that there was a lion of any kind, he has this vague, a similar sensation that the other pilots all have around their own lions. He has this sensation around a lion that he will not wind up ever operating.
I was going to say this could have been the reason that he dropped out of the Galaxy Garrison, because he saw this as a much more important task for him to undertake.
Yes. I mean, it could be that the lion, the blue lion, was reaching out to him in a different way than the lions have typically reached out to their paladins. It also might suggest that Keith has a higher perception of whatever the lions are actually communicating than the other paladins might. So this might suggest that there's a deeper link between Keith and the lions than we might have seen so far.
And if you start to say that there's a deeper link between Keith and Allura, then you know you're going to drive a lot of fans crazy here.
I will say this, shippers. There is no overt attraction shown between the two in this story. But obviously, hope springs eternal, right?
Well, there's no relationship at all yet.
Right.
I mean, obviously, Lance is out there. You know, he loves the girls. He's going after every girl he can find. But you know, there's no relationship whatsoever. You know, that it can be drawn from these first three episodes that are combined into The Rise of Voltron.
Right. And frankly, the magnitude of the events that are going on is so great that, you know, who's got time for that sort of thing at this point, right?
Right, right.
So, so on the whole, did you like it, Mark?
Yeah. I mean, this is going to be the next big thing.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a Netflix original series that's just going to blow people away.
Yeah. I loved it. It was exciting. It was new. It was different yet familiar. It pushed all the right buttons for me. Loved it.
And like they had said, it's for all ages. All right.
Yeah.
It's not for kids. It's not for adults. It's for everyone.
Yeah. And my 4-year-old was initially a little concerned that she'd be a little scared. She doesn't really like naughty people, as she calls them, you know, bad guys in the shows that she watches. But she did make it through The Rise of Voltron. And again, I think a lot of the story points were you know, a bit too complicated. But for her, but she enjoyed it enough to watch it all the way through and said that she liked it. So someone as young as my daughter could very well dig this series. And I think once you're through, I mean, the setup is always a little bit complicated in shows like this. I mean, certainly, I think if you look back to the 80s series, the setup, you know, it took, what, 4 or 5 episodes before Voltron was formed.
Yeah, there's four.
Yeah, there's a bit of a ramp up there, but once you got into the groove of it, you know, it became easier, I think, for the simpler stories. I don't expect that this story is ever going to be simple, but I do think it's probably going to be I'm speculating that it might be a bit easier for even the younger folks to follow a bit more closely. Would you agree, maybe?
Right, and the fact that they can do that, and the fact that this is not formulaic, you know, that it doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to see Voltron every episode, that there's going to be a fight between a Robeast and a Voltron. You know, we haven't seen any Robeasts yet, obviously.
Yeah.
But we know Hagar's there, and we know she'll probably have something up her sleeve.
Yeah, yeah. So, very cool. Loved it.
Yeah, me too. So, going into June 10th, we're going to have this on June 6th. And like I said, all the other outlets out there are going to be putting their reviews of this together on June 6th.
Yep.
So, it'll still be 4 days before June 10th. And we want you to know we're going to be there with you on June 10th. I'm going to be there.
Yeah, I'll be there in spirit, in lion spirit.
So, I'll be out there ready to communicate with all of you guys. And this will be the last podcast before June 10th. So, following June 10th, obviously, we might be able to get a podcast that has something different to do with than Voltron Legendary Defender. But at the same point, we want you to know that future podcasts about Voltron Legendary Defender will be episode reviews, starting with what we see after The Rise of Voltron.
Sounds great.
Okay.
Had a great time chatting about this episode with you, Mark.
Yeah, so did I. And it's great to have Voltron back.
It is.
It is so great to have Voltron back.
Yeah, it was needed once more.
Yes, and we all needed it. And trust me, we're gonna have good times with people, hopefully, getting together, whether it's at New York Comic Con or other places. But whenever Voltron fans come together and combine like Voltron, it's going to be a good time.
It is indeed.
All right, we'll see you all next time on...
Let's Voltron!
DreamWorks Voltron, Legendary Defender. All episodes June 10th, only on Netflix.